Hans Arnesen is my guest today on the Trophy Dash podcast. Hans talks about being a 13-year-old and riding his bike cross-country and racing cross-country skiing in Minnesota. He comes to IU and joins ATO because of the relationships that he formed as a kid. He talks about all the lessons he learned leading up to his victory in 2006 Little Five. This is a wonderful podcast from someone who mastered Little 500. You're going to love it, because I sure did. Thank you very much, Hans, for your time.
Kissing the crowd, Hans knows how to play it up. One lap to go to win his first ever Little 500. The Alpha Tau Omega cheering section and teammates standing by.
I know that one of his coaches, Michael Kerberg, is going to be really excited about this. Michael structured Hans's training program and helped make him the rider that he is.
Into turn three comes Hans Arnesen, all smiles.
And he deserves this. He very much deserves this. Not just helping his team, but also helping other participants in the race through Riders Council.
Down the stretch, the Borg-Wagner Trophy awakes. The 56 Little 500 goes to Alpha Tau Omega.
And here comes the race for second.
Hans Arnesen.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Dude, thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good to participate. I've been enjoying listening to these interviews, these podcasts you've been doing.
Thank you. It's been a fun project. You know, as I'm trying to track down people and teams that have mastered Little Five and hearing their stories, you are at the top of the list.
There's a lot to talk about, I'm sure.
Well, what you did and what your team did. It was pretty special, as you know, from my viewpoint, coaching the Cutters and having to coach against you guys. It was always difficult. And so if you're up for it, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Well, before we start, though, tell me what you're doing these days. What's got your attention? Where are you living?
So I'm living in Southern California. I've been out here for almost 11 years now. And I moved out here to work for Oakley. And I worked for Oakley for almost 10 years, made a transition about a year ago, and working at a smaller company now. It's been good. Liking life out here.
Yeah. Sunny California, huh?
Yeah. It's been great. I spent a bit of time even living with some former Little Five riders. I mean, they're friends for life. I've lived with Josh Beisel out here and Rob Perez. It's been great.
Well, that's a common theme through all these interviews is the relationships people form.
Yep, absolutely.
And I know you've got a lot of those deep relationships with people.
Yeah. From my team, from other teams, built a lot of great relationships through Little Five. I'm very thankful for that aspect of it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What was your youth like? Were you into bikes when you were a kid, or what kind of athlete were you?
I was. And I mean, really specifically about biking, I got into cycling at age 13, and that was through Decycles, which we get into. I mean, my coach on the ATO team, Norm Hoos, he led those trips when I joined. So a little bit of background on that. Norm rode on Decycles long ago with my dad. On the original, on the original Decycles trips. Those were, I think in the 70s. And from my understanding, there was a little bit of a pause where there's nobody running those. And then Norm took over and started running those programs.
You're 13 years old, so it's catered towards youth or teenagers.
I was the youngest by 2 years. I was under the age cutoff. I think the age, 15. You know, my dad, though, he spoke to Norm. He said, hey, he's been training and riding all summer, and he can do this. And so I did. But that's where I first rode with older riders, and a lot of them were from IU. And there's other Little Five riders at that time.
Is that something you really wanted to do, or did your dad push into that?
He didn't push me into it. He said, here's something you could do. Would you like to do it? Got me a bike, kind of a cross bike at the time. Yeah, it didn't push me into it. I just started going out riding during the summer and really enjoyed it. So that first trip, we started out in Bloomington, Indiana, and we rode to Niagara Falls. I think it was something like 800 miles. And I stuck with that almost every summer until college. So
where were you living when that
I was I was living in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot I could talk about with that, but just to touch on other sports as well. Like I did cross country skiing. I raced competitively through junior high and high school and started doing really well with that. I mean, from winning junior varsity meet and then getting onto the varsity team, and our team won state championship my senior year. We ended up finishing second in the country. I think Alaska beat us as a team. and my personal best was probably 10th place in the country. We had a really strong team. I had some very strong teammates that won nationals and did some very great things, went on to the Olympics even. So that was something I was considering to pursue going forward, looking at colleges for cross-country skiing. But ultimately, the draw to IU with Little 500 and the business school, that combination, and the relationships I had formed with many people on the Disciples trips that drew me there.
This experience with cross-country skiing and early bike riding, did this form your confidence level as a high school kid and an early age college student? Like, would you call yourself confident, or were you?
I don't think that's where my confidence really formed. I was, like I said, through Disciples, I was always the youngest, it felt like, but I did start feeling confident in my abilities just as a cyclist, but not to do with racing, but I knew I was a strong cyclist. I had biked across the country in one of the summers. We rode from Huntington Beach all the way to Atlantic City, New Jersey. And I think I was the youngest on that trip as well. And again, competing with Little 500 riders on these trips, it started to form some confidence, just as my ability, and knew that I was a strong rider, but I didn't have any race experience in cycling at that point. And on the cross country skiing side of it, like I said, some of my teammates were even much stronger than myself, but it was really good training, thinking about how that might have applied to Little 500. We were doing 5 to 10K races as a skier. And so those efforts were anywhere from 13 to 25 minutes. And it's like doing a set in a Little 500.
Well, maybe one of your sets.
Yeah.
So you get to IU, and how does ATO come about? Getting in the fraternity, or why that fraternity?
Yeah, so really was tied from Disciples. So I knew Michael Kerberg from Disciples. I knew some other riders from Disciples from ATO, like Wes Kelly, Sean Monroe, and of course Norm. So I was looking at other houses, and I was also looking at independent teams. I knew that once I came to IU, I was going to ride Little 500. I wanted to find a house that had a good team, hopefully. But also it was really important to find a place that had the right fit. And the fit was really, really strong at ATO immediately because of those existing relationships. It was a decision for me to go to a fraternity versus independent team. You know, I did some training rides with you and the Cutters and even the Gafambi guys. And I knew there were really strong teams, but I was drawn to this, the alumni support, just having a huge house. I mean, we have over 150 guys, I think, in the house. And there's a huge alumni base, and just found interest in that. So building a legacy, something I can come back to after I graduated. And yeah, not to jump ahead, but
So that was a good match for you. And it sounds like you mentioned some of your early coaches and mentors with Norm and Kerberg and Wes Kelly.
Yeah.
These guys help cut down the learning curve for you when you're getting in a little five.
Yeah, absolutely. They definitely did. And it was just a really good fit from the start with the house.
And so do you start riding with the team? Like you join the fraternity or you're all in the bike team right away?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody knew that from the start. I had that cycling experience. I didn't have any race experience. I'd never raced one day for cycling, but they knew I was just a strong cyclist. And Kerberg, he was, I think, a pro at the time, and he was vouching for me in the house. So the other brothers knew that was serious. But yeah. Started right away. And just like history of the team before I joined was in 2002, ATO finished six laps down. It was 13th, but that was a fast race. I remember that was Corleone's. Six laps down. The best finish, I think the last time they won was 1971. So wasn't necessarily stepping into one of the most elite programs, but we had a strong team. And motivated guys. Yeah.
And what did you have to learn, you think? Coming into this unique event of Little Five, what were you lacking or what did you have to focus on?
Oh, so much. There's so much, so much to learn. You know, it's a different type of bike. Had to learn all the basics, how to do an exchange, how to ride on the track, and then just race strategy. I knew nothing about at that time. I was a strong rider, but I knew nothing in terms of race strategy. So that first year, the first race, thinking back on it now, it was chaotic.
That's 2003.
Yeah. It just goes by so fast. Like the race feels like it's moving at 1,000 miles an hour, and it's hard to remember all the different teams and the colored jerseys that they're wearing and who's on the lead lap and what lap you're on and how many laps to go. Like it was chaotic for sure.
Had you prepared for that, you think, in hindsight?
To the best that I could. Could we have done more? Yeah. But we were, like I said, I gave you a history of what the team was in 2002. So 2003, we knew we were stronger and I could help the team, and we knew we could be on the lead lap, which we were. And we weren't mentally prepared for any end game tactics kind of thing. We were just like, all right, let's be there. Let's be present. Let's try to make a sprint. And we did that. You know, we finished on the lead lap. We finished in eighth place in this bunch sprint. We were just boxed in.
It's a very, very tactical finish, that race.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, a lot of strong riders, man.
Yeah. Were you on the bike at the end?
No, I wasn't on the bike at the end. You know, again, just like going back to our tactics, they weren't so concrete. And I was just out there. My strategy for my role on the team that year was help out Tom Miersman. He was our senior rider. He was our fastest rider that year, even though I did really well. I mean, I placed in ITTs my first year. I think 11th. I placed 11th. And, you know, all the other juniors and seniors ahead of me. Tom Miersman, I think, was right ahead of me. But he was a little bit faster. But my job was just to eat laps. I raced 84 laps that first year and tried to help out my teammates. But we didn't have strong fourth rider, and this is kind of a recurring theme and story. I don't know if we want to get into it now, but that was one of the thinking back, like my biggest challenge with Little 500. It's a team event, and that's what makes it so exciting. But it was a challenge always to get four strong riders. You know, our first year, I think our fourth rider raced two laps. You know, so we had a lot of work to do for the three of us. As a recurring theme every year, there's always something. Somebody's leaving, and then you have to find new riders or get somebody else in the house motivated. And
You got to find him a bike, find him a kid.
Yeah.
And teach him from scratch.
Teach him from scratch. It's a lot of work. That's the most challenging thing for me. My experience with Little Five is doing that every year. There's always an unknown of one of our riders. Maybe, like, I remember one year he had to take the MCATs the day after Little 500. And he didn't think he'd be riding Little 500 because of that. And every year, that was a challenge. Yeah. Mm.
So the 2003 race comes, you guys are right there. Will you walk away from that? Are you feeling disappointed, or are you feeling really fired up and like, we can do this now? You're having beliefs in yourself?
Both. Honestly, it was both. Like, Tom didn't get a chance to sprint. He was boxed in. So he was mad. Our team, we knew we could have done better than eighth, but it did give us confidence that we were there on the lead lap in the bunch sprint. Like, we knew that there was a lot more we could do. And myself personally, I had a lot more I could do in terms of just learning strategy. So it was both. We were upset, but also excited for what we could do in the future with more preparation, more training, more race experience. Yeah.
And you guys make a big jump from 2003 to 2004.
Oh yeah.
Like suddenly everyone in the field knows who ATO is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what'd you guys do that summer, that year leading up to 2004 differently?
So for myself personally, it was getting more race experience. I can't remember all the specific dates and timeline, but I think it was that spring break leading up to the 2004 race that I did my first road race. I don't think I was even doing maybe a couple IUCC races at the time, but not very competitively. It may be in the C class or whatever it was. But I think I won my first Cat 5 road race. Might have been the first one I did, too. I can't recall. But went on spring break, and that was part of our regimen, was racing either on the way down to Florida or on the way back. And I think I won the road race the first day, and then the criterium the next, and then there's a time trial. It was kind of an omnium. I won all events, I believe it was that year. And that really started to instill some confidence. And honestly, I was surprised that first win. I was surprised that I just won the race. I was like, what just happened? Oh my gosh. it all just happened so fast. But then I started to just put the pieces together and say, okay, this is how it works. I need to sprint here, you know, not waste my energy here. I started to really understand some of the strategy and tactics with that. So
who's helping you with that?
Kerberg, for sure.
Michael Kerberg.
Yeah, Matt Moore. I remember he was coming down on our spring break trips. And I think even on that trip, I remember brief, maybe it was Cornelius was down there. Like, there were a few guys with Kerberg that they were racing too, and I just started to pick their brains a little bit. That was one of the first things I remember. And then that year, I believe we won the practice race. You know, not that it's a big deal, not all the teams are trying or anything, but that was another confidence builder for us. We won the practice race, if I remember correctly. And we were like, all right, you know, we're going to be up here. We're strong.
Yeah.
I knew going into the spring series events too, like, I got fourth that year in the time trials, and three guys ahead of me were all strong seniors. I think the top three guys placed, they were kind of in that, I don't know, what do you call it? Like the big heat of the night. They're all racing.
Yeah. Like the happy hour.
Yeah. They were in the happy hour.
Power hour.
Yeah. I wasn't in that. And I raced like hours apart from those guys. The track conditions were quite different. In my opinion, they had some pretty favorable conditions, but nonetheless, I got a lot of confidence from that fourth place. And then I believe was in contention with missing out. I think I've made it to the finals, maybe got fifth or something. Tom Mearsman was third place, I think, in that year in missing out. So we started to really build our confidence there.
Yeah. And, you know, you guys have some adversity in the middle of that race. You have that crash right in front of your pit, and I forget which teammate it is that reacts instantly.
Yeah.
Mearsman, maybe.
The teammate that reacted was Chris Bentz. Yeah, yeah, Jeremy.
Chris, dude. Yeah. That is golden. Oh. That reaction, not waiting for someone to tell him what to do, darting across the track, you know, just responding like that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. You know? I'm glad you remembered that, because that was crucial to our race. I can't remember what lap that was. That was late in the race. And, yeah. And a rider.
And you lose a rider that there too, right?
Yeah.
Like a collarbone or something?
Yeah. Yeah. He broke his collarbone. And one of our riders, Chris Bentz, was the crash fortunately happened right in front of our pit. And Chris was off his trainer getting ready for his next set and watching the race. And he just instantly darted out as soon as our rider went down, grabbed the bike, got on. He rode a lap or two on a bike with broken handlebars. But he salvaged, probably saved us half a lap from what could have been much worse. So,
like, had you guys talked about that stuff? Because that's, I mean, to me, that's kind of high level. That's graduate course level, little five, you know?
Mm-hmm. Really testing my memory. I can't remember all the specifics, but if there's anybody who had talked about and thought about that stuff, it was Chris. He was our senior rider, and he was very experienced, and he watched a lot of race tape. He got, you know, that helped me a lot. He brought that down in spring break every year, and he'd get us watching race tapes to get ready.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I did a lot more. Even after that, 2005 and 6, I could talk about that later. But yeah, the presence that he had to keep us in there was amazing. So it was a big effort to come back from that, and we had to race ourselves back into the lead pack. And I ended up doing bigger efforts than I wanted to. We had a much better strategy going into this year's race, and I was going to sprint at the end, but. Had to put in some pretty big efforts catching up there.
Yeah. And you're sprinting against some really top guys with, you know, Simeon and Chris Vargo.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, we know the outcome, right?
Yeah.
There's a penalty called against you impeding 2 seconds. Yeah. Cutters are awarded a victory. That's got to really burn, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That burns a lot. But, you know, that year, I really, going into it, I started to visualize what I wanted to do. This is, you know, the early ons of forming my race strategy. And I remember telling my dad the night before the race, we were out to dinner together. And I said, here's what's going to happen in the race. Called everything. And I said, here's what's going to happen in the end of the race. We're going to be going into the second to last lap. I'm going to take the lead. I'm going to lead it out from the checkered flag, and nobody's coming around me. Mm. And I came up with that just looking at the race the year before with John Grant. Yeah. Did the same thing. I said, that's what I'm going to do. That's exactly what I did. Unfortunately, it was right position. Vargo and I were the only ones to escape out of that crash in turn two.
Were you aware there was a crash?
Yeah, I was aware. There was, I mean, I didn't know the extent of it. I never looked back, but I could hear metal. I could hear people hitting the cinder. I knew there was something going on. I didn't know what happened, but I just pointed out my strategy. I was full on through that whole last lap and not looking back.
Yeah. So that ends disappointment.
Yeah.
But you have 2 years left. And going into 2005, another really challenging year. You guys are, what's the team like that year, 2005?
Yeah. So, well, just to recap on the 2004 race, we looked at previous race tapes and we'd studied strategy too. And we looked at the 93 men's race, the 98 men's race, the 2004 women's race. You know, prior to me getting this call, this impeding hooking call, it had never been called in the race before.
No.
And I had seen it done. I studied. And I didn't know it was anything that could be called. Honestly, I didn't do that in road racing. I didn't know there was anything wrong with that type of move. I had watched very specific examples just like that, just taking taking using your trajectory out of the turn. It wasn't an abrupt movement or hitting anyone. So if you have race tapes and you look back at that, 93, 98, and 2004 is very, very similar. But, you know, we dealt with a lot of adversity coming out of that. And
yeah,
we grew from it. We definitely grew from it. And going into 2005, we had a lot of confidence. We knew that we could be up there on the lead lap. We knew that we could win the final sprint. And we knew that those other top riders from 2004 had just graduated. So
we... Like 2005, yeah. You're flying, aren't you? You get the ITT record.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's a time trials are won by tenths of a second. And I crushed the record by 3 seconds.
Yeah. Right.
It was something I knew I could do. In the spring break that year, I was training and we did a number of time trials. I put down a 260. Now, I wasn't on the little 500 track. We were riding on a different track, but nonetheless, that gave me a lot of confidence. And I knew that I could bring something special. So to do a 215 at that race, yeah, that gave me a lot of confidence. I knew I was faster. So
you were really focusing on that. You put some time into that effort.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. I mean, we always trained. We did just through our normal training every year, we do time trials on the road, and time trials in general is just a great way to judge your personal performance, how you're getting better and progressing. Also how you're comparing to other teammates and Norm and ATO team. We had records of our secret time trial course going back for years. So you could compare, like, how are you doing against others? And that gave us a lot of confidence too. So yeah, we'd practice on the track time trial specifically and really get into that, because it's just having that ability to sprint 4 laps, that helps you a lot in the race too. There's a lot of times where you have to make up gaps. If you're not getting the perfect burnout from your teammate, you got to catch back up, chase back from a wreck, whatnot. I mean, there are so many times. Yeah. So
2005, you guys are going in probably his favorite team.
Yeah.
Right there with, you know, there's some others, of course, Dodd's House, Cutters, Fiji, ATO. It's a pretty good field that year.
Yeah. Honestly, I never felt like we were the favored team. I know I was strong for a number of years, but I never felt like we were looked at as the favorite team. But we knew to ourselves, we had everything. We had everything we needed to win that race. That was our strongest team, you know, out of the 4 years I raced, we were really strong that year. And we dealt with so much. You know, we crashed on the first lap. There's a lot that went into that. And just to explain from my perspective, like, one thing that was different, they used a Indy 500 pace car. Right. And that car has its fast gears, and then it has, like, basically a neutral slow gear. And that slow gear wasn't fast enough. We were really bunched up. We were really bunched up going into the start of the race, and going into turn one, I'm in position 4. So I'm on the inside, second row. I had so much energy and so much speed that year. I couldn't believe how slow we were going. Like, my mind was already in turn 3. I wanted to be going so much faster, and the front row leading it out was still, they weren't going that fast. And yet, I mean, Cutters starts, they're on the outside. Third. Yeah. They're outside row 1. Yeah. They start cutting in turn 1, taking over the front position because it was going so slow. And that caused the rider in the front, I think he slowed up a little bit, and then his back tires skidded out, and I was right on his wheel, because again, I was trying to go so much faster than this. And then I had to slow down, and I tapped my brakes, and my bike just slid out. It just slid out from under me. It's not like, you know, it happened so fast. I didn't even let go of my handlebars. I literally didn't even let go. I scraped the cinders. My hand was torn up after that race. because I just rode it with the handlebars and going 30 miles an hour on the cinders. I picked the bike up, got back on, and we were the only team coming out of that wreck to catch back up. And it took 55 laps of intense chasing. I mean, as you could see the race types, like looking at all the top six teams that came out of that, they knew we were down. And that was their their chance. And it was a pace line for almost 55 laps. And we were down a lot. We were down at some points three quarters of a lap. So with the top six teams working together and us trying to take out 1 second every lap or half a second every lap, it was so hard. It was so hard, but we did it. I mean, we had that strong of a team. Mm. We came back, and I mean, that was a harder race than any other race, any other little five race I've done. We came back and caught up to the pack, and then we were in contention until, again, late in the race. It was like, I can't remember what lap, but we got assessed a impeding or a creeping penalty.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. I wasn't sure what it was
for. So there was some crash that happened on the track, and we happened to be doing an exchange when this crash happened, and the rider who was getting on the bike didn't know the crash happened. So he's sprinting out after just doing this exchange. He's sprinting to catch up, and they call him for a creeping penalty at that time. We were just shot. It was 5 seconds.
He's going right.
5 seconds, too. Huge.
Yeah. He's going right past the chief steward, so he catches it. Okay.
Yeah, and we weren't off the front or anything like that. We were actually catching up because we had a bad burnout and there was a crash that our other rider got behind. So we were already off the back of the lead pack, and then a 5 second penalty at, like, I think it was late, like 170, something like that. And oh man, I had to get back on the bike with 25 laps to go or something, and I put down the biggest set that I've done in my little five career. I know, like, 2006 I did a huge set. This was even bigger, nobody saw it. It was faster. I was going so hard just trying to catch the leaders the last 20 laps or so, but we couldn't pull it back.
And yeah, Fiji and Dodds are attacking, and tough.
Oh man, we had everything that year, and just, we experienced everything. So yeah, that was a really tough year. I left the track, and we ended up fifth, and I left the track, went straight to the hospital, spent almost, you know, not the whole night, but I spent the evening in the hospital getting the whole left side of my body cleaned up and stitched up, and came back the next morning and spent more hours soaking in this, like, Novocaine filled the hot tub, and they would scrub out all the cinders. Oh, it's terrible.
Are you having any doubts at all? Any questioning, why am I doing this?
No doubts at that point. It was just learning from all of those experiences, everything that we saw, learning from it, processing it. Okay, how could I have avoided that? What could I have done better? What do we need to improve on? And it all just built up and culminated in 2006, because I think through these 3 years that I had raced, I'd seen and learned so much about the little five, and it's unlike any other race and how it operates and how the dynamics are. And, you know, if somebody goes down, you have the other teams who are sprinting against you. It's just unsportsmanlike, but it is what it is. And all these yellow flags, it's crazy. So in going into, like, prepare for next year of racing, we were ready for anything. We were prepared for every situation. And I think I've heard on your podcast, I think I've heard one other rider talk about it, but it was preparing for every single situation so that you could react to it instantly. And that's exactly what we did. We looked at every single type of race situation, and we said, if this happens, how do we react? So that it's there's no communicating with the pit. It's just instinct. You just go and you do it. We were ready for anything.
What's your team like that last year? Do you have a You said 2005 is your strongest team. 2006, it's made up of a freshman, sophomore, senior, junior.
Yeah, you had all the classes covered. You're right.
Yeah.
Again, it was difficult fielding a full team. Mm. And you would think all this momentum was a strong team. You get a big house. You'd have this huge roster of people just looking to sign up. And so at that point, we did have interest, and we'd get some brothers out on rides, be like, oh, I want to try out. And then they would feel intimidated. They felt like, because again, you have to train somebody from the ground up. Most people who haven't even biked before, they felt like they couldn't devote the time needed to be that caliber of teammate in that short amount of time, that most people were discouraged. Be like, I want to, but I can't, and don't think I'll be strong enough for you guys. It was hard. So, I mean, our fourth rider that year, we got him in the race, but he rode five laps, I think.
You talk about how much time it takes. How did you balance it? Balance social?
Yeah. I don't remember balance ever being a problem. I definitely partied and was social and part of the fraternity, enjoyed all of that. And I did my hours on the bike, and it was many hours. I can't remember how many hours we were training that, 15 to 20 a week, and then doing class. I guess school comes pretty easy to me. I'm not like an A plus student, but I did have good grades and was able to do that pretty easily. So it allowed for other time for me to devote to cycling and social and everything there. So yeah, I definitely committed more time to riding as the years progressed. And by my senior year, 2006, I was mentally, I wanted to have an edge on everybody. So I was training a lot. I was getting out when it was pouring rain, because mentally I could tell myself, like, nobody else is going out right now, but I'm going out right now, and I'm getting an edge on everyone. And I would do a lot of solo rides because I wanted to be in the wind. I wanted to be breaking the wind. I wanted to be putting in that effort so that if I ever got a draft, it just felt like recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was huge for me. I did rides with my teammates as well to help build the team. And we had a great, strong team. But our strategy was, you know, let's get it. My teammates, if they can just be able to stay in the race, I can do all the attacking out in the wind all day long.
And you're like the captain of the team now. You're becoming the mentor, the teacher, the coach. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's fun.
That's a good role for you. You enjoyed that?
Yeah. It's difficult at times. Like I pointed out, I mean, just fielding a strong team of four riders, but it is fun to have those guys and to train them and share the knowledge and share the tips and how they can get better and it really accelerate them. I mean, yeah, we had two rookie riders here and we got them up to speed really quickly. And like I said just before, we just wanted them to be able to hang on my wheel during training. And for example, like Team Pursuit, my senior year got canceled because of rain, but I would have won that event. I was going to pull every single lap. That's what we were doing in training. And I was putting down times that were seconds off of some of the Team Pursuit records, not too far. I felt really good doing a 15 lap set out in the wind, and my teammates were able to hold that. So we knew they were strong. They could stay in the pack with anybody.
So how's your strategy forming going into that last race? What are you guys talking about in these last meetings leading up to the race?
Yeah. So what I realized and learned from all these different experiences is Little Five is a chaotic race. Two things. We have to be prepared for anything, as I touched on. We have to know exactly how to react in that moment. And also, I want to create the chaos. I want to put other people on their heels. I don't want us to be the team reacting as we have in the past, all these situations. So if there's a situation, if I can create some chaos out on the track, I'm going to do that and make other people respond to it. And I mean, that just what happened, I was taking advantage of every single situation on the track that I could. For example, if I'm riding in at the front of the pack and I see there's some other riders we're going to have to pass up ahead, and some lap riders, and it could create some chaos with us and maybe a crash or something, I would sprint and get ahead of those riders before anybody else, and then the speed picks up for the pack, and then they have to get around those riders at a higher speed, and there's even more chaos. And like, you need to create that. And it, mm-hmm. and also, for example, if I saw a wreck happen, I would jump out in front of the pack as fast as I could, because I knew strategy wise, there could be a yellow flag coming up. And if I was 20, 30 yards in front of everybody else with their yellow flag, that gives me a gap, and a yellow flag I can recover. And that's what ended up happening. Like, it's, I forget which lap, but after I'd sort of,
okay, yeah. Well, let's don't get that far ahead yet.
Yeah. This,
that's magical. So
yeah.
Coming into the morning of your last race, you're walking up to the track. Like, yeah. What's your thoughts? How are you feeling? What's that energy like?
Very calm, very happy. It was in slow motion, drastically different from the year before, or my first year racing. Like I mentioned, it was so chaotic the first year.
Yeah.
By this last year, I had told myself my attitude going into this last race, like, for example, compared to 2005, I was so serious in 2005. I wanted redemption. I was mean. And 2006, I realized like anything can happen in this race. It's not all about just getting that win, because in one microsecond, the race could change. So I need to enjoy it. And I was just really happy coming into that race that no matter what happens, we're going to have fun. We're going to really enjoy the day. So I remember we had an amazing send off at our house. The fraternity does an incredible job with that. We get all the brothers, everybody out front, family, and man, there's hundreds of people out on the front lawn sending us off, and just puts you in the best mood ever.
There's something called law of attraction or manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like everything that you were training for and studying, you had been manifested for you in that 2006 race. Right. Chaos.
Yeah.
You using others' teams to your advantage, being out in the wind by yourself, long sets. Like, you rode a 41 lap set, that first set, and there's this, it's chaos all around you, but somehow you're comfortable. You're using the other teams to kind of rest. You know, there's a moment where Cinzano is doing a hard pull and you're just waiting behind him, being patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, it was just in slow motion. I felt like I could see two steps ahead of everybody. Like, I could see everything that was happening, and it was just coming together. Yeah. There was a lot of mental prep that went into that. Like I've talked about, but just so much of studying race tapes, specifically Lil Fi. I realized like, this is like no other race. Yes, there's race strategy and you need to know sprinting and all that, but you need to study a lot of little five tapes to understand what can happen in this race and how you should react. That helped me so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you stay out there until you've lapped everybody.
Yeah, that was not planned.
Well, I don't know how you could plan it, but it was quite amazing.
Yeah. You know, it was... One thing we had mentally prepared for is, could we lap the field? Could we do that? Sure. We talked about every scenario. We talked about that previous year. So something we'd planned for. Did we plan to go out in the first 40 laps in one set and do that? No way. But I was taking advantage of every situation. There was a point in that first lap set. It was a very critical point. I think this could have changed the race where...
I bet you I know what it is.
Okay. You want to go first?
Is it where you're signaling to pit, you're going to come out?
Yep.
And instead of coming out like you thought you were going to, you sit in a little bit, get a breather.
Yeah, very.
And then you catch the cutters, and then you sit in, then you catch Dodds.
Yeah. So very,
is that it?
Very astute, Jim. Yes. Yeah, that is precisely it. I was going all out trying to get as big of a gap as I could. Just to back up for a second, like I found myself out in front the first time with Daniel Houchins,
mm-hmm.
because of what I had started talking about before. Like I saw a wreck happening, so I jumped and I tried to get as big of a gap as I could before a yellow flag came out. And it was a while before the yellow flag came out, and we had a big gap. Daniel Houchins and I were up there. It was just him and I. So we got any yellow flag for me is like going to the pits and resting. I was fully recovered each time that happened. So then we come around, and the advantage being in front is they're waving the green flag for you. So I was honed in waiting for that green flag to come. And as soon as I saw him reach his arm to pull that green flag, I'm getting a jump on everybody else again. That's another tactic, is just trying to react faster and then go all out from a sprint. So doing that, but anyways, I turned around at one point and Houchins was dropped. I wasn't putting in an effort to drop him. I was thinking like, this is him and I, we're going to lap the field. Mm-hmm. I'd raced with Daniel and IUCC, and he was a time trial teammate there and knew he could sit out there with me, but I don't know what happened. I was just pedaling and turned around for him to take a pull, and he's gone. And at that point I had to make a split decision, like keep going. And I kept going and started leapfrogging and was going all out, but then nobody else who was sitting on my wheel wanted to work for me. So to that point that we were just talking about, that you nailed, I was gassed. I was ready to pit. I needed mm-hmm. to switch. I needed a break. I just needed to sit on somebody's wheel. That's all I needed, but nobody was going to let me. And I'm not going to sit on somebody's wheel if they're not going to keep a high enough pace to keep the gap up. So I motion and I'm coming out of turn four to pit. And then I see these guys just pull through, like they're going to sprint away and try to gap us. It's like, all right, thank you very much. And they had no idea that I was even there. I just sat on their wheel. Not too long. That's all I needed, was a little bit of recovery. I was at my lactate threshold, and I recovered, and it came back. You know, there's another. Yeah.
And it is a team sport, and your team does a great job after that, including you, of just staying with the group, keeping the race together.
Yeah. They did a fantastic job. I know. Thinking about all this, like I got off the bike, I don't know what lap, 45 or something. And everybody else had been exchanging multiple times and chasing.
Yeah.
We had a fresh rider on the bike. He was ready to go. We actually, like, he just pulled out to this lead, and we were talking in the pits. We're like, do we go for two? I mean, we had fresh riders and I had more to give and we had a gap. No, it's just sit back. Let's just play this safe. Yeah, they did great. Yeah. They did so great the whole race.
And you're back on the bike at the end for a ceremonial, like five laps or something.
No, I closed it out with like 25 or something.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I
just want to make sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I rode 125 laps that year.
Oh my.
We did 10 exchanges on the dot. That's the race minimum. That's we would have done less maybe if we could, but we actually got so far into the race. We were like, how are we going to get 10 exchanges? And we Norman was mapping it out. He's like, all right, you're going to do this many laps. You're going to do this many, and then you're going to go in and you're going to close it. So I went in and did the 10th exchange, rode however many final laps, 25 final laps, and had to close that out. And I was gassed again at the end. In my mind, I was worried if everyone would, the top whatever teams together would come and put a conceited effort, just try to gap me again, but that never really happened. And
no.
I was able to hang on.
And then take the checkered flag. You know, what's it like when you see that checker flag for you. And then you're, and then you do a lap and come in back to your pit.
Yeah. That was probably the slowest little 500 lap I've ever done. Lap 199. Honestly, it was like 47 seconds or something. I was just soaking it all up. This is my last lap I'm ever going to ride on the track. I was looking at every team as it passed, everybody in the stand, just like, it felt amazing. You know, we crossed the finish line first before, but then had a penalty and crashed on the first lap. We'd gone through so much. So end on that note was incredible.
And Little Five is a big part of your college experience from freshman to senior.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you grew a lot during these years.
Yeah. It was a defining part of my college experience. Got a lot from it. Made a lot of really close friends. Learned a lot. You know, gave me, learned a lot about how to build a strong team. Deal with adversity. You know, come back and prepare. Even giving like a number of interviews helped me interview for jobs later on. There's a lot I learned from it. Yeah.
If a freshman came up to you and said, "Hans, give me some advice. You know, what should I do? I'm really into this little five thing. I want to get good at it." Mm-hmm. What do you tell a rookie?
So from my experience, it would be to start racing, you know, do some road races, just get the experience, that strategy. That's something that I didn't have for a couple of years and learned so much from it. So you could start with IECC, you could start Cat 5 on the road. You'll learn, even if you don't place well at all, you'll learn so much from it. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing that I wish I had done even sooner. And watching a lot of little 500 tape, that's what slowed the race down, is watching a lot of little 500 tape. Because I knew every situation, anything that come up, how to react to it. Just, it puts the race in slow motion that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's your relationship with all your teammates now?
Well, I still talk with the teammates, but I haven't seen some of them in a few years. I was coming back to Little Five every year up until HDNet. Access TV contract ended and haven't been back since then. But yeah, I even live with Rob Perez, who's a ATO rider that started riding after I'd left the team, but live with him for a number of years. He's a really close friend now. Yeah. Teammates for life.
What is the future of ATO?
That's a sad subject.
Oh
yeah. I mean, the house is kicked off of campus and I think it's permanent. Maybe not. Yeah. That's really sad. Cause like in the beginning of our talk here, I said, I wanted to join a house that really had a legacy and been around for a long time. They'd been in the little 500, I think almost forever. If not forever. And after we run, just for example, in 2007, the team didn't even qualify in the race. Didn't even get to defend the yellow jersey.
Mm-hmm. You know,
they were contenders the next couple of years, but not too long after that, they were multiple laps down. They were non-contenders, finishing, I think, dead last one year, and then now kicked off campus for the past few years. So there's nothing I can even do to help out or. It's sad. I wanted to be able to come back and visit the house, help train a team. There was so much momentum that we got from alumni support leading up to 2006, because I'd really worked at that. I'd worked with our housing board to get emails of former riders. I started putting together a newsletter, just trying to get interest. And we weren't one of those teams who were well-funded, like some of the stories I've heard. Nothing like that. We just needed a few thousand dollars to cover spring break. And try to get a basic bike for new riders, trainer, like just basic equipment. We were getting a lot of momentum leading up to it, but after we won in 2006, it was crazy. The outpouring support from former riders and other classmates, brothers from these riders, it was humbling. It was amazing. They're like, you know, let me know whatever I can do. It's so much momentum to carry us forward for a long time. And I don't have a team to go back and cheer for now. So I cheer for Norm's team. He's been coaching Black Key Bulls. Norm rode for Black Key Bulls back when he was in college. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you graduate, you win Little Five your senior year. You graduate in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Are you ready to move on, or is this something that kind of is hard to get past it because you're a big man on campus all of a sudden?
Yeah. I mean, I knew I had to move on, but it's hard to move on. Yeah, it is. This is definitive. My college career was Little Five, and moving on from all the friends and the competition. And it's just a special race where it's once a year and you train all year, you look forward to it, and you don't have that to train for or look forward to the next year. That's hard. There's no other races that you could win that are even like that or participate in. So yeah, it was really hard. And you're just going into work, you know, starting a job. And I was trying to still do some racing on the side, but nothing competitively. And thinking back, I wish I had a mentor who had pushed me harder for what I could do with cycling. I had a number of people reach out, and they could have helped me. And I mean, Jonathan Vodders, for example, and I know Robbie, blanking out on his last name.
Ventura
went up to his place in Chicago. He tested me out and did that. Like, I had a number of people reaching out, but I didn't have anybody pushing me. And as a kid, just a college kid, like, I thought, I came here to IU, to the business school, to get my business degree and start working. And I didn't understand what like a life after psych racing could be. Like, if I tried to do something even further and more competitive and try to go pro, something like that. Like Vodder said, I have a spot on his TAA craft team at the time, if I could just cat up to a one. But I just didn't fully understand, like, what could that be like? I felt like I was delaying my career, you know? But after working at Oakley, for example, I've worked with many former professional athletes who now worked at Oakley, for example. They work in sports marketing. Like, I didn't realize, like, you could segue from that into a professional career. And I wish I had somebody who could have laid it out, pushed me a little bit more to understand that. And also with track cycling, that's a regret I have, is I never once tried track cycling. I didn't have the equipment. I didn't have somebody pushing me to do that, but I bet I would have been a really strong velodrome track rider.
Well, you're still a young man, and there's masters racing. Yeah, so. Right.
There we go.
Well, anything else, Hans? I really appreciate your time. Do you have any questions for me? We have a few minutes here left.
I'm just curious, like you pointed out at the start of the interview, what it was like to plan to race against myself and my team and strategize against us those few years that we were contenders. What was that like?
It was difficult because, you know, I think everyone had the same strategy to try to take advantage of your teammates, which was really a poor strategy because your teammates were always in good shape and always capable and always prepared. But that's about the best we could do against you. And, you know, it didn't work in 2006.
Yeah. Did you guys try to, like, you had a plan, a specific teammate you tried to isolate or attack at some point?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember that, but we thought for sure your teammates wouldn't be able to keep up.
Yeah. That's our sleeper advantage, I guess, to our team. Everybody trained hard, very, very hard on our team.
Yes. And it was a silly idea that we could have exploited them.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It was great to catch up with you and hear some of these stories I had never heard before.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, it was great talking with you. And I love your podcast. I hope you can interview many other riders and can listen to all of the wins and the years in the past. Right.
And when Little Five gets going again, like, let's get you back out here and let's watch the race
Absolutely.
Together.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Jim.
All right, man. You're welcome. Bye-bye. Wow. That was really great, Hans. Thank you. Thanks for sharing so many memories and so many of your experiences at Little 500. You and your team definitely mastered this event. And it was an honor to talk to you today. And it was even a better honor to watch you grow up through Little 5. Good luck to everything. I look forward to seeing you back in Bloomington sometime soon. Bye-bye.